the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 1:53 p.m. It is February 7, 2018. Before we begin, I want to thank Christy Blair from the House Judiciary Secretary, who makes sure we have a transcript of our proceedings. And I actually, it's not Kelsey, so I can recognize you. Eileen from the Juno LIO, who makes sure we have sound. At this time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, we have Representative Kopp, Representative Reinbold, Representative Christ Tompkins, who is acting as vice chair, and myself, Representative Klayman. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Our first order of business today is House Bill 312, Crimes Against Medical Professionals, sponsored by my office. To provide a brief recap of the last meeting on Monday, committee members reviewed the bill and heard public testimony, and since then, the Department of Health and Human Services has amended their fiscal note, and that's updated so that the fiscal note from the Alaska Psychiatric Institute is now a zero fiscal note. There was also several questions asked about why was the Pioneer Home and the Veterans Home excluded from the health care facility as defined. And I reviewed this to look at the origin, and it turns out there's a lot of different statutes that define health care facility. And the reason that we chose this particular one is that the Veterans Home and the Pioneer Homes are primarily, I would recognize the representative that has not joined us, the Pioneer Home and Homes and the Veterans Home are primarily senior citizens. Past the deadline, so I've ruled and we won't be taking it up in the committee. Thank you very much. Any other questions about the bill?
Yeah, can you answer the question again about the Pioneer Home?
Sure. It turns out when you go through the statutes, there's a lot of different definitions of healthcare facility. There's not one single one in different parts in the statutes. And the reason that we had not included Pioneer Homes and the Veterans Home in that is that they are primarily assisted living homes and senior living facilities, and their primary duty is not medical, providing medical care for people that come in seeking medical care. And although they provide medical care services, that's not their primary role. And the second part is that in the reports that we heard from the community about where these were issues, they weren't coming from the Pioneer Home or from the Veterans Home, so we didn't see that as a primary issue in terms of what we're trying to address through this bill, which we've tried to narrowly tailor to the concerns that the community has brought to us. Follow up?
No, I was just going to say, so I guess we'll just wait until somebody from the Pioneer Home or the Veterans community comes in with a problem, and we'll just add that to one more of the exceptions.
Well, I think that would be one approach. I certainly think we can certainly continue to have discussions after we finish with the bill, because it would, if there was a sense that the body was interested in that kind of change, we could amend it on the floor. I don't see that as a problem. And I think your concern is, you've raised an interesting question. And
my point is that we just have so many exceptions that perhaps it's time to actually revisit the whole thing.
I think that concern is well noted. Representative Reinbold, did you have your hand up for another question?
I did. You said you have any more comments. Well,
actually, this is questions. We're going to go to comments after the questions. This is questions about the bill.
Okay. I guess the question for me is, Ledge Legal's been extremely busy, and I know that you stated that you were trying to make this bulletproof and so that no amendments can be done. I think it's a derelict of duties when you're shutting out the minority members.
Representative Reinbold, I have ruled that that amendment was late. We're not going to revisit that. Are there any other questions with regard to the bill? Hearing and seeing none, that brings us to further discussion. And as I have in the past, we'll opportunity for all members to have comments on the bill. We're going to have one each member, like we do on the floor. We'll have one opportunity to make final comments, and we'll limit the comments to 3 minutes per person. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first impression of seeing House Bill 312 was a mixture between amusement and quasi-apathetic curiosity, because I had no notion of why such a piece of legislation would need to exist, and I thought this was a particularly poignant example of where public testimony and, I guess really to some extent, the committee process and discovery and written testimony really put on my radar a problem that I had no notion of existing previously. So the legislation seems on point, and I also feel like I have greater awareness of some of the negative externalities of the drug and alcohol problems ravaging a lot of our communities, and I think enhanced curiosity about the relationship between law enforcement and response to these socioeconomic problems and the healthcare system and the role the healthcare system is playing or sort of being drafted into, maybe to some extent. Educational, great bill, and I'm really excited to support it.
Thank you, Representative Christ Tompkins. Anyone else wish to comment on the bill? Representative Reinbold, do you want to comment on the bill?
I do. I think that this bill is very, very important. I think it's very sad that post-Senate Bill 91, that there's been a dramatic increase of assaults to healthcare workers. And sadly, I didn't get my issue on the books, where basically it was many other states have a fourth-degree assault against healthcare workers in a healthcare facility as a felony. And that was what my amendment was. This will be coming to the floor as an amendment. I will absolutely do this on the floor. But I think it's absolutely critical that we not only address the issues that are in the bill, which I think is a very good first step, but I also think that there is some missing. So with that, I will be an amend as this bill moves through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Reinbold. Any further comments about the bill? Representative Eastman.
Thank you. Now, I know we call this discussion, but it seems like there's very little opportunity for actual discussion. Certainly, if I were to go first and say something about, you know, my thoughts about the bill, and then someone else says something else differently, and I, you know, tend to like it, and I change my opinion, then there's no opportunity for me to ever make mention of that when it comes time to vote, which can be confusing to the public. Now, my thoughts on the bill currently are, I see that it only has, at least in this copy, only one committee of referral, so I'm curious why we're rushing it through the system. If there are additional amendments, it would only seem like we're pushing that off to the next committee, which would probably be the Rules Committee if that maintains to be the case. I know that we've heard from law enforcement that there's a desire to be able to, you know, have the ability to arrest someone who engages in this type of behavior, whether it's at a hospital or whether it's at a soup kitchen or wherever that assault might take place. And it seems to me assault is assault, whether it takes place in the back of an ambulance, whether it takes place on a street corner or wherever it happens, and the victim is just as injured and the public is just as violated by the crime. So I would be very interested in seeing an amendment come forward that would deal with the assault for itself and giving law enforcement the ability to arrest someone if they need to, maybe not, you know, force them to, but giving them that may authorization to arrest without tailoring it to, you know, specific exceptions like healthcare facilities or anyone else on that long list that we discussed in our last meeting.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. Anyone else?
Sure.
Representative Kopp.
I just wanted to thank the committee for their support of this legislation and just to briefly address the comments of my colleague, Mr. Eastman. You know, speeding is speeding. You can be 20 miles outside of Cantwell on a 10-mile stretch of road, and you can be speeding through an elementary school zone with 300 kids getting into either the bus or in their moms and dad's cars, but they are very, very different. What this bill recognizes is not an attempt to remove all due process from the law, and I know you consider constitutional rights a high priority, as do I, so we're going out of our way to not remove due process of arrest warrants in all misdemeanors. But we're looking at high-risk environments where people absolutely need to know they're safe. Patients, healthcare workers, and people that are accompanying them. Healthcare facilities have to be a place where that work can be done safely. It is entirely different between two people going at it. One of them, you know, you're right that assaults occur in other environments, but all environments aren't the same, which is why I brought in the speeding analogy. And I think that that's where this bill gets at, is we have to recognize that healthcare facilities are much more sensitive to assaultive conduct occurring within them. And this gives law enforcement a tool to not just cite and release, but to hook and book. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kopp. Representative Ledoux, Representative Stutes, any comments?
I will take an opportunity to make one small comment. Having been in the healthcare industry myself many, many, many years ago, I can't be any more supportive than I am. This is just a terrific bill. It's really needed. Our healthcare workers are at risk in enough other manners that they don't need to be at risk by being beat up by the people they're trying to help, too. So I fully support it.
And I will just, in response to the issues raised by Representative Eastman, I think the oath that we take to uphold the Constitution I take very, very seriously. And part of that is the constitutional right in the Bill of Rights and in the Alaska Constitution to not be held, be arrested without probable cause. And so when we take a step to loosen that requirement, I believe we must do that with tremendous caution. And for the same reasons that Representative Kopp has addressed, I hear some police officers saying that they would like to have greater authority to arrest for assault without a warrant in any circumstance. But I note the Department of Law is not here taking that position, because I think the Department of Law, if asked, would say to go very, very cautiously when we're going to take away people's constitutional rights. And so I for those reasons, I would not support an amendment that broadens the authority to arrest other than the very narrow step we've taken here, which I think is consistent with our obligation to protect the important constitutional rights of every single Alaskan. And so with that, Representative Ledoux wants to talk. Okay, go ahead, Representative Ledoux.
I actually do have one comment, and I think this is an important bill, but I'm concerned whenever we single out one group of people, be they first responders or medical personnel or any other group, and say that, you know, if you've assaulted them, then there is an exception to the presumptive sentencing and you go higher. Not because I think that those groups are not important, but I think we're all important. So if you're willing to go higher for the policeman or the fireman or the nurse or the doctor, then I really think we need to revisit the whole concept of the presumptive sentencing. Because if any of us here got assaulted, or our kids got assaulted, or our parents got assaulted, or our friends got assaulted, I mean, I think that the sentences should conceivably be as high as those if a doctor is assaulted, or a nurse is assaulted, or a first responder is assaulted. So that's just my concern, that maybe we need to just do away with those presumptive maximums when it comes to everybody.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Well, everyone's had a chance to comment. Representative Christensen, may I have a motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move version 30-LS1225/O of House Bill 312 with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Object.
There is an objection. Madam Clerk, if you would please call the roll.
Oh, okay.
Do you need a minute?
Representative
Christensen? Yay.
Representative Ledoux?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Fansler is absent. Representative Eastman?
No.
No. Yay. Representative Stute?
Yes.
Yay. Representative Reinbold?
No.
Nay. Representative Kopp?
Yes.
Yay. Chair Klayman?
Yes.
Yay. That's 5 yays, 2 nays.
So by a vote of 5-2, House Bill 312 moves from the committee. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the paperwork. We're back on record, and our next order of business is House Bill 129, our second and final order of business today, Fish and Game Offenses, Licenses, and Penalties, which is sponsored by the House Rules Committee by request of the Governor. This is the third hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. There's been a number of questions about fiscal notes, and we have here today the Deputy Commissioner from the Department of Administration, Ms. Robb, and also Ms. Howell, who is the Administrative Services Director from the Department of Public Safety. And I would like to ask both of these individuals to come forward to both provide us some information on your fiscal notes and explain the process of preparing fiscal notes. And if you could introduce yourselves, and we'll let Ms. Robb from the Department of Administration start. But I'm not sure who's who.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Sylvan Robb. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Administration. And for the record, Kelly Howell, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Public Safety.
All right, Ms. Robb, if you could tell us about the fiscal note that Department of Administration has submitted, and also if you could provide a little bit more insight about the preparation of fiscal notes and when that gets done and when that doesn't get done.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are in the process, and we will be submitting an indeterminate fiscal note on this bill. Shared Services of Alaska does do collections for the court system. Those collections all come over once the court has transferred those fines and fees to collections. They come over in the aggregate, and so we have no way of parsing out what percentage or what amount from past fines are related to fish and game offenses versus other types of offenses. So until we have some more data in the future, at this point we couldn't say what the impact would be of this bill. In terms of preparing fiscal notes, I don't really want to speak about fiscal notes in general. I can speak to, I'm not an attorney, but in terms of the way fiscal notes have been handled in the past, a fiscal note is required if there is going to be a positive or negative impact on a department's budget. So in the absence of there being an impact generally, you will see zero fiscal notes if it's an obvious question about if the committee is likely to wonder why there wouldn't be a fiscal note, so that the department has a chance to explain that.
Representative Liddy has a question. I'll go ahead, Representative Liddy.
So in other words, when something just merely affects the general fund for the whole state, but not one particular department, nobody writes a fiscal note for it?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, certainly if you remember revenue bills that have come up over the past couple of years that are definitely intended to impact the general fund, and that's the intent of the legislation, those have shown the change in revenue. But again, it feels a little bit like a question maybe for legislative finance about fiscal notes.
Thank you.
But you understand, you understand at least as Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Administration, is if a fiscal note would raise revenue and those funds would come directly to your department, you would have a fiscal note showing the net positive effect of the bill. But if it's going to the general fund but not specifically to your department, that wouldn't cause you to have a fiscal note representing the income or the revenue.
Mr. Chair, that's been the convention in the past.
And then, by contrast, if it was going to cost your department more money to do whatever is in the bill, which would be a negative fiscal note, then you would, again, you'd be looking at your department only and not beyond your department.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. So if the funds to be raised were to be retained by the department, then the change in revenue would be reflected.
And I know you haven't finished the indeterminate fiscal note, but is that reflecting that there may be revenue coming directly to Department of Administration, or is that revenue, if it comes in, going to the general fund? And if it's going to the general fund, why would you be preparing an indeterminate fiscal note if you don't believe there's any reason this would bring revenue to your department separately?
Mr. Chair, the way collections work for court system debt, once it's transferred to collections, if it has been successfully collected by a vendor that we've employed to try to increase collections for the state of Alaska, Shared Services receives a percentage of that. So if fines were increased, then the amount of money that we had the percentage to collect on would increase.
Representative, that's got a question coming from Representative Ledoux. Go ahead.
I'm not sure what you mean by shared services. I mean, so is this fiscal note being prepared by shared services or by the Fish and Game?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the fiscal note that I'm speaking about would be the fiscal note for the Department of Administration, our Division of Shared Services, as it relates to our collections portion.
Okay, thank you.
If this has a fiscal impact on Fish and Game, that's a question for them.
Thank you.
And just by way of clarity from my own understanding, the Department of Administration has different contractors that they will have contracts with to try to collect debt. And in that instance, if they collect $100, if the Department of Administration might get 3 or 4% of the $100, whatever the contract says, and the other $96 of that $100 would go to the general fund. So the indeterminate role is whatever percentage you might be getting from contractors collecting these debts on behalf of the Division of Shared Services. Have I got that right?
Mr. Chair, you are mostly correct. The contractor that we employ to do the collections gets a percentage of the money. That's their incentive to do the collection for us. If the amount of the fees isn't changed, then our ability to receive more or less money is not impacted. So if it was $100 for a criminal offense and now it becomes a $100 violation, that would have no impact for shared services in the potential collection. But the primary reason that our fiscal note will be indeterminate is because the debts that are transferred to collections from the court system come in the aggregate, and so they are inclusive of all types of debts, Fish and Game along with everything else.
Representative Price Tompkins has a question.
Thank you. I guess I'm approaching this in a slightly different direction. To me, it doesn't so much matter whose fiscal note is what. There's sort of a mathematical, court system, administration, DPS, I don't care. What I do want to know is, what's the fiscal impact? And if data shows that, say, 10 black bear have been illegally harvested on average over the last 10 years, and we're doubling restitution, I'm just going to make up numbers, from $1,000 to $2,000, it seems as though there would be a positive fiscal note associated with that increased restitution of $10,000, because you're doubling a relatively new number, and we're doing that 10 different times in this bill with restitution. And I guess I'm curious what is indeterminate about that. I'm not so much caring which agency has the fiscal note, but why is the number indeterminate, and why is there not an estimate of revenue raised from increased restitution?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, just to be clear, for Shared Services of Alaska, we do not collect restitution. We collect fines and fees imposed by the court, but we don't handle restitution. As to why other agencies may have indeterminate fiscal notes, that's a better question for them.
Representative Chris Tompkins.
I realize this is probably been covered in the past, but which agency handles restitution?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, having confirmed with Nancy Mead, the court system.
Follow-up. Representative Chris Tompkins.
And my recollection from when Ms. Mead testified is that the court system in turn passes that money on to the general fund. So do you know, with not creating an exercise here and having this meeting run up and answer, who would receive the money that the court system in turn passes on restitution revenue to?
Through the chair, Representative Chris Tompkins, the money flows into the general fund, and I'm getting beyond my scope of expertise, but once it's in the general fund, then it's up to you folks to allocate as you see fit.
Is that enough, Representative Chris Tompkins, or more follow-up?
I guess a half question, half comment. It just seems unlikely to me that there's sort of an open maw into which dollars flow and no one keeps track of them. I mean, it's Department of Revenue. I mean, someone's got... The court system has to liaise with someone, and I'd just be interested to know who that is and if that person or that entity, which hopefully keeps track of restitution dollars that flow in the general fund, could give us an estimate of how much increased restitution revenue would likely be forthcoming with the passage of this piece of legislation. I realize you're not that person.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Representative Chris Tompkins, I just note that seems like that has a different practice than the legislature has done when there's revenue that's coming to the general fund. We haven't necessarily gotten too into the weeds, but we can see if we can find that. Representative Eastman, you had a question.
Thank you, and through the chair. Yeah, like my colleague to my right, it would certainly seem to be very doable to attach a fund code to any funds that are being collected by the courts when they transfer that to revenue or administration, whoever they transfer it to, just make sure those funds are identified based on, you know, the kind of categories that we want to keep track of, if nothing else. And I think certainly if we have specific crimes that are of interest to us, then that might be something we want to keep track of. So I would definitely encourage finding a way to gather that information, or I just maintain that information, probably be the more accurate way of saying it. And I'll hold my other question for now. Thank you.
Thank you. You can go ahead and answer.
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, the money does go to the general fund. I'm not saying definitively that we can't say what the amount of that is, but I can certainly find an answer to that and get that information to the committee.
And a follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
Thank you, and also just to follow on another comment from my colleague. I'm not necessarily looking for, you know, bean counters to be able to tell me in a fiscal note, for example, that, you know, so many black bears were killed last year, multiply that by an increased amount of funds. I think, you know, that kind of question is a good question, but I think rather than a bean counter, what I'm really looking for is an economist, someone who can assess that there's a, you know, supply-demand curve at play there. I would assume, I could be wrong, but I would assume that, you know, if we're significantly increasing the penalty for a violation, hopefully we're going to get fewer of them. And exactly how many fewer, that's of course for someone like an economist to say. But that information is of interest to me, and I think would certainly be of value to policymakers like the legislature.
Go ahead. Oh, that was a comment, not a question. Okay. I think, Ms. Robb, you're off the hook now. Ms. Kelly, Ms. Howell, if you want to describe the Department of public safety's fiscal note or discuss that as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, this is Kelly Howell. The Department of Public Safety has submitted a zero fiscal note, and as Deputy Commissioner Robb explained, the reason our fiscal note is zero is because the department does not expect or will not receive any increase or decrease in their appropriations as a result of passage of this legislation. So therefore, a zero fiscal note is appropriate for the Department of Public Safety.
Okay. Any questions for the Department of Public Safety about fiscal notes? I think we might have exhausted fiscal note discussion for today. I also want Major Chastain, I believe, is available on the phone. Major Chastain, are you with us?
For the record, yes, Mr. Chair, I'm here.
And you're on a landline and not a speakerphone, I hope.
That's correct.
Okay. We had some, I think there were some questions last time about the interplay between this bill and AS 12.55 regarding the misdemeanor sentencing provisions, and if you want to provide the administration's perspective on that, and I think once you do that, we'll probably have some questions. And you all that came forward on the fiscal notes, if you'd rather sit towards the back, you're not required to sit up at the front. If you feel like you've had an opportunity to say your piece, Major Chastain, go ahead. Oh, and be sure to identify yourself before you start speaking. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Major Bernard Chastain, the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. And so the question has to do with changes in penalties within this bill. The question last week had to do with the increase in potential fines for Class A misdemeanors. And so a little bit of background to tell you how we're here. This bill was introduced first in 2015, 16 legislative cycle. And during that time frame, SB 91, SB 54 had not gone through the process yet, and those amounts had not changed. But if you recall, in SB 91, the actual value for a Class A misdemeanor went up to a maximum of $25,000. So part of the SB 91 change aligned penalties under AS 12.55.035. Under a Class A misdemeanor and increase that value to $25,000. So this bill, as it moved through the process over the last couple of years, several things changed. One of the changes in there was to align Title 16 with a variety, within Title 16 there was a variety of misdemeanor offenses. Some of them were unclassified misdemeanors with specific penalties for each statute. And so what this bill attempted to do was go through and align the misdemeanor offenses as all Class A misdemeanors within Title 16. But if you also recall, it creates a secondary class within each one of those sections of a violation offense. And so while some of the offenses have in fact gone up in the potential maximum fine that a court could impose, up to $25,000, all of the offenses listed in this bill also have a secondary possibility of charging it as a violation offense with a maximum of $500 fine. I have those broken out by section if you'd like me to go through each one of those. I can talk about how those have changed. But in general, the possible fine is a maximum fine of $25,000 under a Class A misdemeanor as changed by the legislature in SB 91. That is the maximum fine that a court could impose, and it's very rare that a fine will be imposed for the maximum amount. It usually only happens in the very worst circumstances. So, Mr. Chair, I'll allow you to, I guess, let me know what you'd like me to do for the remaining portions.
Major Chastain, unless somebody on the committee wants to go down offense by offense, I don't think we need to go down that path, at least not yet. But are there questions for Major Chastain? Representative Liu has a question. Go ahead.
Yes, I was just wondering when the bill was initially gone through that the huge difference between an $1,000 fine and a $25,000 fine was never noted for us.
You mean this bill?
Yes.
Major Chastain, can you address that question?
Mr. Chair, Major Chastain. So again, in 2015, when the bill was introduced, the difference in the change that had to do with $1,000, and at the time, the maximum was a $10,000 fine amount. The change in the maximum penalty was changed by the legislature during the changes to the AS-1255. And so when you call it a Class A misdemeanor, that change automatically will change with the legislature's change to SB-91.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux?
I guess I understand that, but somebody was here going through the what basically this bill does, and I guess I would have thought that a change in fines from $1,000 to $25,000, since that's not something that you're actually, I mean, reading when you're looking at it, unless you then go back to the statute, etc. I mean, that doesn't pop out. So I guess I'm still wondering why this wasn't at least mentioned in passing.
Major Chastain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Major Chastain again. So during the first initial bill, which was submitted, it went through the House in through resources and also on the Senate side, penalties were discussed pretty robustly. During this time frame, when I presented the bill to the committee for the first hearing this year, we went through the sectional analysis and went step by step. I certainly wasn't my intent to skip over any of that information. It wasn't part of a decision that we made to do that. It was just simply to move the bill through the committee.
Thank you.
Any other questions from Major Chastain? Hearing and seeing none, are there any further questions in general about the bill from any of the committee towards, I guess, Major Chastain, you're actually the bill sponsor, effectively. Any other questions for Major Chastain about the bill in general that we haven't addressed? And anyone comments as to House Bill 129? Okay. Well, what we're going to do on House Bill 29, we were going to hold the bill until Friday, and it will be my intent to take up amendments to House Bill 129 on Friday. I think we had previously set deadlines to get amendments in on House Bill 129, but we'll continue to hold those over until 5 o'clock tomorrow, Thursday at 5 p.m. Let us know if you're getting one prepared and get it submitted electronically by 5 p.m. I would recommend for those that are seeking amendments to make sure Ledge Legal knows that there is a 5 o'clock deadline, because sometimes that will help them put that on a higher priority and get it done more quickly. And so that's what we'll be taking up on Friday. Before we adjourn for the day, though, Representative Reinbold actually wanted to add a comment with regard to House Bill 312, and so I'm happy to hear your additional comments. I understand you're... Well, go ahead.
Thank you for the indulgence. I did speak with another sponsor of the bill, and I just want to make sure that it was very clear to this committee that I absolutely support the bill. I will be a yes vote, you know, unless there's any major changes that I disagree with, which I highly doubt. I'm a yes vote at this time, but I just strictly wanted to make sure it was on record that I do support the bill. The only reason I voted no is because the amendment, I just think it's so important. Whether the amendment passed or not is irrelevant, but the fact of having the minority voice heard is very important to me. And so that was how I was voting no at that moment. It was to move it out of committee. But as I signed the thing, it was yes with an amend. So I just want to make sure that there was no lack of clarity. And Mr. Chairman, thank you for your indulgence. I do appreciate that.
And thank you for your clarification, Representative Reinbold. So we talked about amendments for House Bill 129. With that, we will adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is scheduled for Friday, February 9th at 1 p.m. And with that, we are adjourned.